Virus that has gotten loose. And whenever these stories come up, I always think about our dear departed colleague, Patricia Doyle. Patty was always on top of so many different things, and we miss her very much. Dr. Henry Nyman is with us tonight, and let me do a real quick just a intro to this. Rarely animal coronaviruses can evolve and infect people. It doesn't happen all that much. And then spread between people, such has been seen with MERS and SARS. We've covered that with Henry already in the last couple of weeks. The outbreak in Wuhan, China, has been linked to a large seafood and animal market, or markets, called wet markets, suggesting a possible zoonotic origin to the outbreak. There are ongoing investigations to find out more. The three top headlines on this story: world on alert for potential spread of new SARS-like virus found in China. Number two, WHO, World Health Organization, says new China coronavirus could spread and warns hospitals to be on the lookout worldwide. And number three, Thailand finds Wuhan novel coronavirus in a traveler from China. Henry, welcome back. So what's going on? A lot of things, I guess, continue to present themselves. You got to keep looking. They're out there.
Right, right. It's a rapidly evolving story, and there's a fair amount of misinformation out there, so I thought I'd kind of go through this. I mean, the two main stories are, as you mentioned, the patient in Thailand, who was a tourist from Wuhan and was identified with a fever check at the airport right after she landed. And the other story is really not new, but it's how many different variations of human-to-human transmission can be cited by WHO and various media reports.
Can we, Henry, we start with the misinformation stories that you mentioned and put those out of the way?
Well, some of the misinformation has to do with how this outbreak compares to the SARS outbreak. And they're quoting from some people who should know better. I'm not going to mention any names, but one of the arguments is that it's not really spreading that quickly, and that you know, it's only going to be attacking people with older people with underlying conditions. And one that actually uses the sequence and claims that, you know, there's only four sequences in bats that are SARS-like, and that this new virus is related to the one that's most distant to the SARS virus. That one, well, number one, there's there's a lot more than four SARS-like bat sequences. Because the outbreak back in 2002-2003 led to a search of what the natural host of the SARS virus was. It was, as you recall, it was identified in civet cats and raccoon dogs and other exotic animals that are sold in wet markets at this time. At that time, it was in Guangdong province, and at Hong Kong subsequently. And it didn't appear to be the natural host, because they looked at wild civets and couldn't find the virus. And that led to a search for what the natural host would be. And that involved looking at a lot of bats in southern China. And they found that bats had a lot of different coronaviruses, and including ones that were related to the SARS virus and coronavirus. And they did a lot of testing. It's been ongoing. I mean, they started testing back in 2003, and you know, there are new sequences being deposited as late as 2017. So, I mean, it's been going on for over a decade.
When you say new sequences deposited, who are they being deposited with, these new sequences? Into what database?
Most of the sequences are in the, it's called GeneBank. And it's a U.S. government facility. It's, it literally has millions of sequences, and it's publicly available. Anybody with an internet connection can basically click on it. And I actually sent you a link to the new sequence of that was isolated from the seafood wet market. And anybody can click on that link and get to the characterization sheet that kind of tells you the name of the virus, what researchers isolated it, who sequenced it. It's annotated, so it basically divides up into all of his genes and has the protein sequence.
This is an extraordinary facility to have available to researchers and scientists. It's really remarkable.
Right. And you can do searches on it, just like you can do a Google search. You can do it. They call it a BLAST search, and you can copy all or part of that sequence and put it in to BLAST, and that'll look at the entire database, and will pull out the sequences that are most closely related to the sequence, to the query sequence. So you can find out which other sequences in the database are related to this virus, for instance, and you can look at individual genes of this virus, because there's a lot of recombination in coronaviruses. So one part might look like one coronavirus and another part might look like another. And it works very quickly. You know, you can get a result in seconds.
Yeah. But from your perspective, being a brilliant virologist, this has to be like nirvana for you to have this kind of a database and that potential. From when you started out, where are we now? Wow.
Well, there's over 40,000 coronavirus sequences at GeneBank. So there weren't back with SARS. There were. I don't know. There were a fair number, because the coronavirus can affect, there's a lot of different versions, and they affect a lot of different species. So there's versions that infect pigs, and there's versions that infect cats and dogs and cows and humans. There were a couple that OC43 and 229E, and those are well-known coronaviruses that infect humans and that produce a rather mild disease. And and then because of SARS, a couple more were identified that also produce fairly mild disease. But the two that produce severe disease are the two that you mentioned. It was SARS and MERS. So those are both coronaviruses.
Question.
MERS is actually in camels, but go ahead.
You mentioned swine, pigs. This is something I don't think we've covered on this program in depth at all. We've mentioned it many times. Something like half of the world's pig population has died. Some phenomenal percentage, 50%, I don't know, in China, maybe higher than that, 60, 70%. The price for pork in China has skyrocketed. A virus went through the swine population like a power lawnmower. This was a hemorrhagic Ebola-like pig virus that just destroyed hundreds of millions of pigs. They had to be put down, most of them. Tell us a little bit about that. Was that a coronavirus or something else entirely?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a coronavirus. I didn't really look at the virus that closely, but there is a coronavirus that does do that, and I'm pretty sure that was the virus in China.
I mean, that was a huge story.
Did that. Yeah, well, that's... you know, that's part of the reason there's so many sequences is there's concern about the type of damage the virus can do, not only to people, but to livestock. And it does recombine a lot. Actually, one of the professors I went to school with, well, actually, he was assistant professor at the time, and I was a graduate student at the University of Southern California. His name is Mike Lai, and he basically wrote a paper back in 1992 showing coronaviruses do recombine. Uh-huh. And he went back to Taiwan about, I think he went back to like 2003, and he's quoted in this outbreak, you know, as the father of coronaviruses. And so he's widely cited on this. And so the coronavirus has been around for a while. The ability to recombine has been known, you know, for, several decades now.
Right.
And some people didn't really believe it when it was basically exchanging emails with one of the sequencers who's involved with the MERS outbreak. And I remember each time a new sequence came out, I told him they were recombining. It didn't believe they were recombining. And he kept saying each time, no, there's no recombination. And after about a month or so, he ended up writing a big paper on recombination.
25%, Henry, of the world's pigs have died of this African swine virus. 400 million pigs dead in China alone. This is a catastrophe. Now, think about this. Pigs, just for a minute, let's just say pigs and people. We're going to compare this. Pigs don't fly. They don't travel. They don't intermingle with pigs in the next county. These are domestic pigs. They're usually raised on swine farms, slaughtered and eaten by alleged human beings. But pigs still suffered 25% worldwide fatality from this virus. Now, a lot of them were put down because of the potential, and they had shown that some of the pigs were exposed and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. To show you how quickly something can spread, the pigs need to be studied. 25% gone in 1 year from a virus, and pigs don't have the mobility we have.
Yeah. Well, the viruses do have the ability, when they get to dense populated hosts, they can recombine. I mean, recombination really requires the same cell to have two different viruses. And so when you get, multiple infections like that, the virus can evolve very quickly and kind of outpace the immune system of the host and create all kinds of problems. And plus, if there's a lot of virus, there's a lot of selection pressure for a virus that can resist the defenses of the host. And so
Henry, new versions
can emerge.
Yeah. I'm not a professional like you. I don't have the brilliance you do in your field. But porcine or pig tissues, their entire construction as mammals is so close to humans genetically that they can use pig valves in human hearts, and it's not rejected like you'd think it would be. So if something can go through the pig population worldwide in 1 year and take out 25% of it at least, are we not potentially open to that kind of a danger, that kind of a scenario? Pigs are awfully close to people.
There is, you know, that scenario. MERS, you know, hasn't
gone away.
So efficiently that it's run through it, but it's got like a 35% case fatality rate. And MERS had, SARS had a 10% case fatality rate. So both of those rates are considerably higher than the flu pandemic in 1918. So if it efficiently transmits, it does have that kind of result, and there really isn't a treatment for MERS or SARS, and of course there's no treatment for this new SARS-like virus, and so there is, you know, a lot of concern about it becoming more efficient. And just along those lines, just to finish up the bat story, there was a lot of interest in southern China for a SARS-like virus. There were a lot that were identified and put on deposit. But as it turns out, this virus, which is in Wuhan, is more in central China. And the two viruses that are most closely, the two coronaviruses sequences that are closest to the SARS-like are two SARS-like bat viruses that were isolated in a lab in Nanjing, China. Nanjing is a little bit northeast of Wuhan, so it's more of a northern location. And there were two bat sequences that were isolated back in, I think it was 2012 and 2015. And those are the two closest. And then there's a third virus that, at least for part of the gene, they're about the same as the two in Nanjing. And that one's called the Langquan virus, right, which I assume it was from Langquan. And Langquan is a little bit southeast of Wuhan. So the three closest viruses in bats are SARS-like, and they're not that far from Wuhan, and they're certainly much closer to Wuhan than the viruses that were targeted for SARS, because they were really looking in areas that were closer to Guangdong province for those. So the reason the Wuhan virus is not that closely related to the SARS viruses in the south is because Wuhan is closer to the north, and the bat viruses that are closest to Wuhan are really northern versions. So that really doesn't have anything to do with how lethal this virus is that's now showing up in humans is going to be. It has to do with the geography, that this outbreak is well north of Guangdong province, and therefore the virus isn't that similar to the bat viruses that were isolated to be like SARS, because SARS was down in Guangdong province in the south, and this is Wuhan, which is in central, and the viruses that are closest to it are actually up in the central and northern region. So it's a geography issue. It really doesn't have anything to do with
let me ask you, if I may, we have 2 minutes to the break, to let me let me just rewind this. Is it possible? The answer is obviously yes, but I'm just going to put it out there like this. Is it not possible that a virus, be it bioengineered, let me go conspiratorial for a moment, or naturally recombining, could rip through humankind on this planet, just like the swine virus, the Ebola-like virus, the coronavirus, a hemorrhagic virus, has destroyed 25% of the world's pigs in 1 year? Could that not potentially happen to us? Yes, of course it could. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that, you know, it's certainly theoretically possible and is certainly a concern. And that's why that's the second development, which has to do with human-to-human transmission. So,
that's why we do these programs. That's right. Human-to-human transfer. Right.
So it's worth going through a little bit more of the specifics of the two new developments, because there's a lot more information that's available today than was available 3 days ago. And it is evolving very quickly. So, this case was made public on Sunday, the one in Thailand. And at the time, all that was known is that she was from Wuhan, and that she had been identified at the airport because they have fever scanners, and she was positive for a fever, and she had some respiratory issues.
Describe a fever scanner. Is that a human being who stands there and looks at patients and asks them, are you having a fever, or do they have a device that they put on the forehead?
They just look at them. They point it. It's a camera. They'll take a look at them, and it'll light them up. But you basically point it at a person, and you can see areas of heat, and you can see they've got a fever.
Ah, it's an infrared sensor. Picks up.
Yeah,
they set it for body temp, and then, okay, got it. All right,
So they can just find people that look hot, if you will, and then ask, if the criteria they're using is they're basically looking for people that have a fever and are coming from Wuhan.
Well, it was a good catch, and that was a logical flight to scan for anything out of Wuhan. Hold on a minute. We would be right back with Henry Nyman as we continue to track this for you next. This coronavirus that doesn't usually appear in people, but it appeared in China, and it appeared apparently to emanate from what they call their wet markets, where people go and shop and look at live animals and say, I want that one, and that one is taken in the back. Maybe they do it right there, slaughtered and dressed and given to the purchaser. That's where they think this came from, and we're on it. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay, and just one clarification. Pig coronavirus is porcine respiratory coronavirus, and I don't think it's actually the same one that caused all the problems in the pigs in China, but it does cause serious problems in pigs, but it wasn't that particular outbreak. But it does cause problems in a lot of different species, including pigs. Okay, so getting back to the coronavirus story, the tourist that arrived in Thailand, we didn't really know a whole lot beyond what I mentioned before the break, that she was from Wuhan, and actually, although she was picked up by a fever scan at the airport, that is somewhat surprising, because that's not a very efficient way of identifying cases, and the example was with SARS. It was SARS because of a few incidents of patients arriving in or people arriving in an air planes that had been infected with the virus and then spread it once they landed. Fever checks were set up back in 2003. And in spite of the fact that SARS was raging in mainland China, other countries like Canada and South Korea set up fever checks. And they ended up identifying precisely zero cases with that approach. And so there were a lot of people in China that were known to be infected with the virus, some of which would have been flying, but none of which were identified through the fever check. So it was a surprise that, you know, this test where they're not looking for everybody in China. They're just looking for people from Wuhan. And they did come up, and they do get people that do have fevers. I mean, Hong Kong, I think they're up to about 60 or 70 cases that they've investigated because they were from Wuhan and had a fever. And of course, this is flu season, and that is the source of some of the fevers that are identified. So it was a surprise that they actually got somebody that was infected with that virus. And one of the questions was, well, was she at that same seafood wet market that was linked to the vast majority of the 41 confirmed cases in Wuhan? And there was a deafening silence on that particular question. It really wasn't clear how she got infected, or even how good the assay was. I mean, did they just do a PCR and get a positive? And they have yet to confirm whether the positive really was picking up this novel coronavirus. And those questions actually were answered today. So this morning, there were a couple media reports that came out and said that WHO had held a press conference, and it was just an update, but they did address this issue, and they did say that the patient basically was from Wuhan and did test positive, and she did not go to that seafood wet market, and but she did go to other wet markets, and that was a big revelation and a major concern, because some of the earlier reports had said, you know, they closed down the market, and there haven't been any cases since January 2nd, or I think it said January 3rd. But this case was identified on January 8th. So it was likely that she got infected after that date, and then saying that she wasn't at that market, but was at a different wet market, or they said wet markets. That raised some serious concerns. And then WHO came out with a statement this afternoon. And actually, their conference was a videotape. So the videotape was available online, and they were very clear that, you know, they were talking about this patient, and they said that she did not visit the seafood market that was associated with the other cases. And so
see, when you say seafood, we're still talking wet market seafood?
Right, right. Well, that's actually how they named the virus. They say a seafood market virus. But they didn't just sell seafood there. They did sell other animals. And some reports, including the CDC, indicated they sold bats there. So it wasn't likely that it was a seafood source, but that's kind of how they refer to it.
And for some of you who may be wondering about this, yes, the Chinese go to these wet markets, which talks about, means blood, basically. And yes, they buy bats. And yes, they take them home after they've been slaughtered and eat them. Why, I couldn't tell you, but this is a fact. And that's not the only exotic animal that they do that to.
Right. And so the wet markets do have a lot of blood and guts and a lot of bodily fluids, which would be a rich source of infection if that animal was infected with like coronavirus, for instance. So so they did give some details on that, and it was interesting information. They gave her whole history, and they say that she actually developed symptoms while still in Wuhan. She developed symptoms on the 5th. And she was in a tour group, and there were 16 people in the tour group, and she actually had 5 family members with her. So there were the 5 family members plus the additional people that were in the tour. They all flew in from Wuhan, and she was well, there was one other person who was symptomatic, but that other person was identified to have RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, and not this coronavirus. And so she tested positive with a PCR test, and then they did more laboratory work. There were 3 different agencies in Thailand that were involved with this, and they were able to get a sequence out of the PCR results. And and the sequence confirmed it was the same virus that was in Wuhan associated with this large wet market. But she indicated she's never been to that wet market, but she does go to another wet market and goes there fairly regularly. So she had a history of visiting not many wet markets, but the same wet market multiple times, which was not the market where the other cases were identified. And so that raised a lot of concern. It indicated that, you know, just shutting down the one market wasn't sufficient to contain the virus, and that this person had it. And the reason, you know, just screening people from Wuhan with a fever was not thought to have a high likelihood of success. Because Wuhan's a big city. It's got 11 million people in it. And, you know, the vast majority of the people in Wuhan did not go to that market, including the one actually that turned out to be positive. And even if they had, and even if they were infected, you know, it's got an incubation period. And so there'd be a chance that they wouldn't get that person anyway, infected people, because they hadn't developed a fever yet. But you can imagine that if you're screening people that fly out of the country and happen to be identified, in this case in Thailand, you can imagine how many people don't fly out of the country if there's 11 million people living there. And so if you come up with a positive that flew out of the country, you can reasonably assume that unless you got really, really lucky, that there are a lot more people that are in the same condition, that didn't fly out and didn't get caught in a fever scan. And the problem is that this person was identified on Sunday, and or actually, I think he was identified on the 8th. There was an announcement. The results came on Sunday. But in any event, she has pretty much recovered, and she's set to be discharged. They're going to test her one more time. And if she tests negative, then she's going to go back to Wuhan. And the issue is that you know, had she not flown out of the country, if she just stayed home, the chances are she would have not gone to a doctor and she would not have been identified because she wasn't. She had some respiratory issues and she had a modest temperature. It was 38 degrees centigrade, which is, you know, a little over, you know, about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So it wasn't, you know, like 102, 104. It was
actually a very slight temperature. Interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm. So she has a slight temperature, had a bit of a cough and recovered. Like I said, there's no real mm-hmm. treatment. You know, hospitalization is more for isolation than it is, recovery. Unless you can't breathe, of course, you know, they'll put you on an ECMO machine and they'll do things if you have serious breathing difficulties. But she didn't have those serious breathing difficulties. And she has pretty much recovered. So the fact that she didn't go to that market, she went to another wet market and, had a disease that wasn't that severe, raises concern that there are a lot more people just like her in Wuhan right now, that there's no evidence of their disease because they're not going to the hospital and they're not getting tested. And so then the city of Wuhan, the Wuhan City Health Committee, put out a report this afternoon also. And they gave more details on exactly what they're doing. And they said that they shut down that market and they got environmental samples, which generally has to do with taking swabs of different areas of the market. And they got positives on the swabs. So they have environmental samples that are positive for the virus at the seafood market.
Now, that's also mentioned that they have wet markets all over Hong Kong. They have them there, too. It's not just mainland.
Right. It's I mean, that's one of the concerns was with the SARS.
Talk about a densely populated city. Wow.
Yeah. And so they've confirmed that the virus was at the seafood market, but they still don't have hard evidence as to what species it was. And then they said they looked at other wet markets, and they came up negative. And I'm sure they have the name of the market that this 61-year-old visited, although they haven't made the name of that market public. They've just said that, you know, it was a different wet market than the one that was associated with the others.
Probably called the coronavirus wet market in Chinese, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think they get a lot of customers. I doubt that it's that obvious. But
just a little humor from Oregon.
That was one of the stories. And then the second story, it really had to do more with the human-to-human transmission. And in this same press conference, which is on video, and so you can kind of listen to the conference, they definitely said at the conference that they had human-to-human transmission. And then when the reporters asked for more details, they said, well, the epidemiologists are still going through that. And, you know, so they're not, you know, prepared to give a whole lot of details. Although there were some rumors that there had been at least one or two family clusters among the vendors or customers. So that was hinting at human-to-human transmission. And then this same report from Wuhan City Health Committee, they started to address the human-to-human transmission. And they said that the wife of one of the vendors was positive, and she indicated she had not gone to the market. Only her husband had gone, and she developed symptoms after he developed symptoms. And so they're assuming that he infected her. And so that would be an example of a small cluster in a family that was associated with the market. But then the report went on to say that there were other people that tested positive who denied being at the seafood market. And so, like the woman that went to Bangkok, there were people still in Wuhan. And like I say, more people stay in the city than fly to Bangkok or fly anywhere. And so those are still being investigated as to whether they really hadn't been to the seafood market. So that raised concerns that there were others. And then there were also people that hadn't gone to the market, but had been contacts of people that were positive. And so that suggested that there was more human-to-human transmission. So all of this came out today and raised some serious questions as to how many cases are there in Wuhan. They're stuck at 41 right now. They haven't had any new cases since the beginning of January. But even though they don't have any more new cases there, this is a case that developed symptoms at a later date. And she, claims to not have any contact with the cases that were at the seafood market. And but she did go to another wet market regularly. So she had exposure to animals that were sold at a wet market in Wuhan, but not the big seafood one that's already been discussed.
They even sell their cages with cats in them. They sell everything there. Frogs, snakes, cats, you name
it.
If it's alive, you can buy it there and it'll be skinned and handed over to you for it. They'll cook it right there for you too.
Right there at the market. So people do like fresh meat, and that's where they get it. And there are many of them. Actually, there was a Google map that was seafood in Wuhan, and I don't know, there were 20 locations that they were kind of clustered, but there were 20 different markets that had fresh seafood in Wuhan as a kind of a wet market. And that probably wasn't all of them. And actually, they said the name of the one that was associated with most of the cases, and I didn't see that come up on the Google search. So it's possible it's got a different name, but it's also possible that there are a lot more than came up on the Google search. So the issue is, how similar is this to the SARS outbreak, and how different is it? And
3 minutes.
There's a lot of evidence that says it's similar. And, I had mentioned this previously, that the SARS outbreak didn't really get going big time, especially with fatal cases, until like February and March. And its first recorded cases were in November, so it may have started a month before this one. And part of this has to do with the adaptation that case, the civet cats were thought to be intermediate hosts. And the virus evolved. In fact, the Metropole Hotel involved a virus that had this 29 nucleotide deletion. And I think all of the virus that was isolated outside of mainland China had that same 29 nucleotide deletion. But if you looked at the outbreak earlier, you can find, including civet cats, You can find the virus without the deletion, and you can find the virus with other deletions that were of different sizes. So there were some that had like 100 nucleotide deletion. So there was a lot of variety before the Metropole Hotel, and that variety likely resulted in not as rapid spread and not as fatal a virus, and then a more this more lethal virus evolved and then started spreading. And they also mentioned super spreaders in their announcement today, WHO. And they noted that, and that seemed to be what they were hinting at. I mean, they said that there has been no significant H2H transmission. And then they started talking about super spreaders and how that spread the virus with SARS. And so essentially what they were saying is they haven't identified a super spreader yet, but there is human to human transmission. And the same thing happened in SARS. It started out a little bit slower. The virus had to adapt to the humans. There had to be selection for a virus that could spread very quickly. And the Metropole Hotel was an example of that, where that virus emerged. It spread out across the world, and they all had that same 29 nucleotide deletion, which wasn't there initially. So that's where we stand right now. There's more than one location in Wuhan. There may be milder cases that are floating around with the virus evolving, because it is transmitting human to human.
It is evolving. Keep that in mind.
But there hasn't been a super spreader case yet, but it's January. There wasn't that much super spreading in January in China. There was some, but...
Well, the stage is set.
Maybe a month behind here.
Let's see what happens. All right, Henry, thank you very much for the update. As always, talk to you soon.
Okay, very good. Take care.
Dr. Henry Nyman. Okay, tomorrow night, William Gean will be here, his first visit of 2020. Charlie Smith will be here, and we'll see who else will be here tomorrow night. Hopefully you will be. Talk to you then.